the Mac Show. Yes, the weekly soiree through the Mac news, such as it is. And unfortunately, most of the Mac news seems to be about Google this week, which I've got no idea how that works. But joining me to discuss it, I've got a great panel. Oh, what a panel we have this week. Top left, we've got Mr. Brian Chaffin, first appearance on the show. Congratulations, mate. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, we lost you there for a second. I don't know why.
Oh, sweet. That's fantastic.
Yeah, just when we start record, everything just goes belly up. How have you been, sir? Because I haven't seen you since Macworld when you played a fantastic set at Cirque du Mac. No, he's gone. Oh, well, that's
a good start.
That's excellent. Excellent. We like that.
His postcard is on its way.
We'll start off with Andy and Atco then. How are you doing, Andy?
Moderately neato. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad at all, mate. You've been working hard, I gather, though.
Yeah, I had a dinner engagement last night that was not only late, but also one of those things where, hey, let's have a dinner that's about an hour and a half drive from home. Mm-mm. And, you know, about a month ago, that seemed like a good idea with a work day for the next day. Today, I'm like, okay, let's see what kind of heavy drugs we have in the house. And if we don't have any heavy drugs, let's see what we can improvise.
Oh, yeah, no. An hour and a half drive as well. You didn't get a beer.
No. Well, it's not a very beery sort of place we went to anyway. It was the sort of place where things come in cans and you throw things at waiters.
Yeah, okay.
It's part of the charm. You tip above the usual 5%.
You were in Birmingham then.
Andy laughs knowingly because he, of course, knows exactly what Birmingham is.
Oh, mate, you've just described it adequately. It's no question.
The posh part, anyway.
The posh part is like that, yeah. Beneath him, it's Kelly Gamont here on time. They're here early.
I was indeed.
Accolade, gold star for Kelly. What you been up to?
A little of this, little of that. It's actually raining here today. We had thunderstorms earlier this week as well, which is rare for here. Mm-hmm. Just like Will was saying, like the rain is common, but the thunder's not. So
yeah, we have thunder. Exciting. Thunder's always pretty rare over here as well, but not too badly, especially in Birmingham. And Will Green, hello, mate. Did I hear a little baby crying there in the background? Do you have to?
Yes. Well, what we'll do is we'll... Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. We got you fine, mate. You're really loud, actually.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
Cool.
I'm all good. I was saying that I was on the dog walk today, and it was like in the park, and then there was like a flash of lightning, and then this massive crack of thunder, and you know, sort of God is in his heaven, and it was terrific. So I think everybody loves a thunderstorm, don't they? Or is that just me?
Yeah, no, everyone loves a thunderstorm.
As long as it's not at 3 a.m., that's all. Last week I had like my entire day absolutely ruined because I got bounced out of bed at 4 a.m. by this thunderclap that must have been like 8 feet outside my bedroom window. And so, dumping so much adrenaline into my system that, you know, there's no chance of getting back to sleep. So for the entire, and I had a big like work day the next day, but for the entire day it was 3 hours of napping, 3 hours of somewhat work, then 3 hours of napping, and then, oh, man.
Did you run out and do a pagan ritual? That's what I always do.
Baby, every day is a pagan ritual.
Rumble.
That's just the way I fly.
There's got to be people out there who are subject to clapodecaphobia or something like that that makes them fearful of it. And last but not least, go on.
I was going to say, I told my wife, right, and I think it's true, but I'm not...
Oh, dude, I was about to say, what you tell your wife and the truth may be two entirely different things.
Well, so here's the deal. Is this true or not? When you hear, when you see the lightning, and then you get the thunderclap.
You have an incoming call from TMO Brian.
Is the thunderclap from the lightning strike or not? Because I was saying it is. So when you see the lightning strike, then you hear the thunder, or the other way around, I can't remember. Are the two connected? Because they say when the storm comes over your head, or, you know, like wherever you are, the two sort of almost coincide, and the concept is that sound travels slower than light. Well, is that right? Because that's what
I was always told, that if you count the number of seconds between when you see the lightning and you hear the thunder, that's roughly how many miles away the storm is.
Yeah.
That's what I understood. But I mean, it's light travels faster than sound. So yeah. But the problem is, if you've got two or three clouds that are concentrated, then you could end up with two or three claps that would overlap and have different lightning to
right.
Yeah. But effectively, the light is at the same time as the electrical discharge from positive to negative that you'd get in the cloud.
Ah.
Because what it is it's a transfer of potential energy, isn't it, across from positive to negative, or negative to positive, actually. No, it's positive to negative, that's right. Positive to negative. Everything goes to negative.
Just not.
It's God moving the furniture, Jesus, Greeny. Scotty, how you doing, mate?
I am good, thank you.
Fearful
nice
of coming
to be
back. Yeah, no, welcome back, mate. Nice to see the microphone showing your visage. Congratulations. Sorted it out. You were three quarters obscured last time we saw you.
Yeah, I've sort of moved it, and I'll speak a bit louder.
Good man. The Week in Apple. I thought we could start off with a chat about Google I.O. because whilst I don't want to go through Google I.O. because we kind of did it last night, I was wondering what anyone's thoughts were on what Google announced and what Apple's response, thoughts, belly laughs, in the sense of a watch, would be about. Because I got to say, you know, a lot of people have gone on about Google with the iWatch thing and Android being adapted for watch. And I think that Apple would sit and look at that. And if they really are thinking about a watch, they would be chortling to themselves because it looked an absolutely horrific, uninteresting experience from the outset. And it didn't work on stage as well as.
I don't know. My feelings about it is that I think that Google's thoughts were, we're going to get the feature set nearly complete, and then we'll, over the next generations, we'll refine the physical hardware design. Because you're right. I mean, you're basically wearing this huge tuna can on your wrist. I think the most telling thing about all the photos that came out of the demos that came after it is that everybody demonstrating one of those watches was wearing French cuffs. So it's like if you've got like really, really big, like clown like cuffs on your shirt, that's fine. You can sort of conceal the fact that you've got this tuna can on your wrist. Otherwise, you're going to have to make that. It's a little bit better than Google Glass, but not much, because the first conversation when you meet someone is to talk about, oh yes, I'm wearing a tuna can on my wrist. But I thought they put a lot of really good features there. I think that it's a great idea if it were a smaller device. But I think that shows the difference between Google's approach and Apple's approach. Apple's approach, I think, would be, let's get the hardware design right first, and then over the next couple of years, introduce the features that will make it really, really good. Because that really is the disconnect, isn't it? If no one cares how useful this thing is, if it means you have to change your wardrobe, if you have to, again, have this real attention-getting device. For me, like though the real big deal breaker was on the Samsung watch, at least 1 day of battery life. It's, oh man, I can barely get my stuff together to charge my phone every night.
You have an incoming call from TMO.
My watch every single night. Knowing that if I fail and I ignore that at 10 a.m. after I'm like on my commuter train, I've got this big tuna can on my wrist that's just a blank screen that does nothing. And boy, do you feel stupid for hauling that thing around.
There was a great point last night from Paul Wright, who said, the problem that you've got is that everything that's around the watch is to do with the phone. It's not to do with the watch. And one of the things that he thought Apple would do is Apple would never release a product which was reliant on the phone, reliant on the iPad, or reliant on your Mac. It would be its own device. It would have Wi-Fi capability itself. It would possibly have a 3G capability itself. It would be its own existence, its own piece of hardware. I thought that was quite an interesting one, because I don't recall Apple ever releasing anything that relied on anything else, unless it was a USB plug-in device.
I think the difference is, though, between Apple and Google, as Andy points out, is Google are prepared to iterate in public, where Apple iterate in private. They're prepared to get something out there when it's really sort of still quite crappy and just say, we'll get better over the next few years. And yeah, if you're picking this up now, they do it at Google I.O. for a reason. It's where the developers are. It's people who are used to using software and beta software that doesn't work and all that sort of stuff. And that's why these guys get the devices first. This is the same as Google Glass. It's not there really for full public consumption yet. And there'll be a few outliers, but they're just prepared to do their R&D in public, basically. And they treat the getting thousands of users' feedback in the early stages differently to Apple, who have their just very small and unique team.
Yeah. I mean, would Apple have looked at Google I.O. in any way and thought, well, that's interesting. They're ahead of the game. We should catch up. There is something we should work on. There's a thought that we could integrate.
The L preview of Android looks really nice.
Really?
It does.
It looks really nice.
Okay. So with
the one thing that really puts pressure on Apple isn't so much Google L is a real big step forward. One of the things that I was really pleased with getting back to wearables is that the price point of these things that are for sale today is $199, $250. And my big fear is that Apple would say, well, let's talk about the chamfering of the edges on our smartwatch. We have a tolerance of 0.00012 using a molecular fusion technique that before has only been used by the space agency. And then you find out that they want to charge $800 for whatever it is they're doing. I do think it's good that it at least puts a little bit of pressure on Apple to say that, okay, well, we thought we might have been able to get away with $400 or $500, but the Pebble Smart, the really good Pebble smartwatch is $200. The Google Wear watches are $200 and $250, so we're going to have to be realistically close to that.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually at Twit the day that you were talking on MacBreak Weekly about the price point issue and someone talking about it being $1,000+ for the wristwatch if it came out, and you were pretty confident that that would not be the case on that show.
That's crazy pants. I don't think Apple has only once ever gotten into the, well, we've got a premium price on this because this is a very exclusively designed product. This is not for everybody, you know. That was the 20th anniversary Mac that they tried to charge $10,000 for, and they did such a good job with that they cut the price down to like less than $2 just to get rid of them. Mm. So Apple does charge a premium for their products. They have a really healthy margin, but in the end, they want this to be a product that people can actually buy. They don't want to have this highly exclusive thing that, you know, you can only use to check to communicate with the second watchman on your yacht.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I mean, I looked at the watch stuff. I saw the interview with the guy about the watch stuff, and it there was nothing there that seemed to make me think that there would be any kind of quake through R&D at Cupertino this week that would have made him thought anything different.
The thing with Google, though, and you've got to admire them for it, you know, this moonshot thing where that's like daft. So you got the moonshot thing where you create this paradigm that you have to work towards, and on the way, you learn stuff. And I think that sort of moonshot mentality is diluted, but in a good way, to bring something to market very quickly. Whereas Apple sort of funny about it for ages, and when they do bring it to market, it might be okay, but the world has moved on. I think that's an accurate observation to level at Apple. They're too slow, and they're losing the momentum of technology.
Ooh,
I don't know that I agree with that.
Yeah, and Apple don't remember. Apple very rarely pioneer markets. So the fact that others are doing a lot of the pioneering, they'll be watching this very carefully. They'll be hearing the comments that are coming back. They'll be seeing it. They'll be learning. And just like they, you know, if they do a watch, which I'm still not convinced they're going to, but if they do, you know, when they come along, they'll say, we've been looking at how watches work in this industry, and now we believe we know how to do it. So here you are. And that might not be for another 3 or 4 years, but they rarely pioneer new markets. They let everyone else, you know, screw it up first, and then come in and use the learning from everyone else to add their particular design ethos on top of, and most of the time, in the last few years anyway, come up with a winner.
Yeah, but they've always been pioneers. I mean, no, the iPhone really. And the iPad.
Neither of those are first to market devices. We forget that the iPhone was revolutionary because it was multi-touch, but it came after the BlackBerry. It came after Symbian phones. The iPad, yeah. I always have considered it as the next step after Apple's response to netbooks, where, hey, people are spending $300 or $400 for these cheap, horrible, crappy Windows compatible notebooks. What is it? What does that teach us about what the market wants?
So I think they're great refiners, but they're rarely pioneers. It's like, no, they don't invent something like brand new, but who does? I mean, everything is interim steps. Every time, interim steps from the very first computer to the iPad to the iPhone, from, you know, who made the first mobile phone. But I suppose the point I'm trying to make is Google is going out there and saying, look, we've created this thing, and they do a better interim step process than Apple ever do. And they're losing that cutting edge that Google are taking them over. Apple is doomed.
You know, I disagree, but I think that they're two different styles of development, both of which work extremely well. I think and Apple's disadvantage is that you're probably not going to see something from them that absolutely that you've never seen before, and you struggle to come up with words to explain it. I think a good example of how this works out well for Google is the Chromebook, which was laughable when the first version came out, and it had a hard time justifying itself and saying, "Well, we're with you, Google, when you say that you can get a lot done through a web page, but why not just spend a little bit more for a real notebook and then just run Chrome on it?" And now, 2 or 3 years later, now you're looking at a machine that is the most reliable and stable computer you can buy. That costs $200 and the build quality is exceptional. And one of the most interesting things to come out of Google I.O. was the idea of using a Chromebook for everything it can do already, but also as an accessory for your phone, where you can have these native Android apps that are on your phone that have always had built-in support for resizable view windows and pointing devices. And now developers can adapt those apps so that if your Chromebook sees that app on your phone that's inside your pocket, you can essentially use the Chromebook as a window and as a keyboard and as a trackpad, so that now you can use Evernote, now you can use your text editor, your Outliner, whatever, as though it were a native native notebook app, and all this for $200 accessory. And you think about how a good iPad keyboard can cost $100, $120 for a good keyboard case, and you start to wonder, man, that is a very attractive thing if you're not already bought into having an ultralight notebook, and you just want something so that you can have good keyboard, good screen, good trackpad. That's nice stuff, and that's not the sort of stuff that Apple would have been able to introduce as we've got a brand new device. Let's spend 2 hours walking you through every single feature because we've thought about every single step along the way. It's great to have 10 million beta testers to tell you what's working and what isn't.
I think that's one of the things that falls down with Google as well, though. Is I said this last night. Their open approach to stuff means that they sometimes don't apply themselves in the bringing of it to market, as in not being a beta. So they tend to walk away from stuff that actually probably would have succeeded with a bit more investment, a bit more advertising, a bit more shtick, if you like, to go with it, which they don't do.
Yeah, I think that is a problem with if you pick up a Google product to, is it going to be around in 2 years' time? Because they do R&D in public. But, I mean, I think we're at the stage now where they were describing in the Google I.O. keynote that this is now about extending a platform. They're very much talking about they are developing a platform. And, you know, so, you know, this, it doesn't, you know, the apps working on the Chromebook or the whatever else is just an extension of the platform. And not everything takes on it, doesn't it? But it's actually the platform itself is now, you know, really solid. That's not going to go away. And in fact, it's starting to get really quite good. And I really do find this concept that Google seem to be going at interesting. You know, the phone is your sort of mobile office. It's where you keep everything, and then but it's, you know, it's not the most convenient device to use everything, but it's where you keep everything, and then you use the appropriate device for where you are to access that stuff, whether you're on the move or you're in your office or you're in your living room on the TV. So your phone is really just simply the way you take everything you own, everything you've got in your pocket, and then connect it to the appropriate device where you are. And if there is no appropriate device, you use the phone.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's why I like the Google Wear concept, where I think that you got to make this wearable. If you want to go with a color touchscreen device on your wrist, it has to be small. The battery life has to be exceptional, at least 3 or 4 days, at least as good as what Pebble does. And I don't think that you can do that. You can achieve that a lot easier if you simply say, we're going to make this a dumb touchscreen terminal to the quad-core, really sophisticated phone that we're absolutely certain you have in your pocket if you have a smartwatch.
You've got to say, though, that the Pebble display-wise is about as good as a 1980s Texas Instrument calculator.
But it's as good as it has to be.
I mean, true.
What I like about it, I've had one for a couple of months. I was wearing it every single day for about 4 or 5 weeks, and by far, I didn't want to play solitaire on the thing. All I wanted was to be able to go like this whenever I feel a buzzing in my phone in my jacket pocket, and not have to take the thing out, unlock it, launch the app to get the information. That's really if Apple's only motive and only design cue is to say it's got to sell for $99 and all it has to do is give me notifications off my phone and just give me a click button that simply says dismiss, okay, do whatever. That's a great $99 product.
But that's not what Apple does.
Right.
That's the key, because that's not what Apple does. They don't do that. They do things, and if that's all they do, they're going to take a hell of a beating for that. That boy, you took a hell of a beating.
Yeah. I think I do think that as we keep on going with this, I do think that what we're going to see from Apple is more like a fitness band than a Google Wear watch.
Yeah.
Well, part of the – you can watch the entire keynote from Google I.O. It's all up on YouTube. It was streamed live that way, and it was kind of interesting to watch. But one of the things about it was we first started getting rumors that Apple's wrist thing was going to come in two different sizes, and then we started hearing the iPhone was going to come in two different sizes. And this was a thing that I was sort of – I'm kind of over rumors, but I was sort of looking forward to it being true because we've had this conversation here a bunch of times, how what fits on Ewan's arm and doesn't look weird is very different from the size of something that will fit on my arm and not look weird. And during the near the end of the keynote, there were two things I thought were interesting. They brought Ellie Powers out on stage to talk, and while she was out there, I was distracted by the giant slab of tuna can on her arm, number one. But number two, so to me, that was sort of interesting. I was, well, maybe, you know, this is the problem I hope Apple solves, is what this thing looks like on my arm. The second thing that was interesting to me was the bit where I think it was Ellie Powers that stood out there and said, here are some things that we are doing to help developers monetize, which is never something you hear in a keynote. I mean, this year's WWDC was a pretty nerdy keynote address. It was pretty developer-focused. There wasn't a lot of stuff there for muggles to sit and get excited over. And so to me, that was sort of an interesting thing. But then to see Google's approach of coming right out on stage and saying, we're going to help you make money as Google developers, here are some features we've added to the Google Play Store, was really interesting to me. Because again, it's a difference of approach.
Yeah. Sorry, my phone rang in the middle of that. I do apologize, Kelly. Hello, is everyone else there? My mother's leaving a message on my answer phone. I'm ignoring my mother for you. Oh, man. I'm in so much trouble.
That is a great point. I mean, I think I've always thought that the biggest obstacle that Apple, above other companies, will want to solve is that they will refuse to ship a product that isn't just as real for women as it is for men.
Yeah,
they're definitely equal opportunities, aren't they? Oh yes, love. The real news: Apple's podcast app has crashed this morning. Apparently there was updates on May 29th, which are clearly causing it, but it's gone wildfire this morning. I've got to say that Apple's podcast app lasted a total of 3 minutes on my phone, and then I took it off when it was first released because it was a POS, no question. But what Apple have actually done, real news, they're launching a new 16-gig iPod Touch for $190, and they're dropping the 32 and 64-gig models to $249 and $299, respectively, in all the lovely pastely colours.
And camera'd.
And camera'd, yes, as well. I mean, is the Touch still a relevant device, and is this a good, it's not an upgrade, is it? Is this a good market ploy?
It is an upgrade. It's cheaper and it got a camera, and you can pick a colour now. It's not just silver.
Okay, fair enough. I stand corrected, Kelly. So is it good or is it bad? Is it worth it or is it not worth it? Are you excited? Are you going to buy one or are you not going to buy one?
Well, it's still a contractless iPhone, so yeah. I think it'll always have a positive thing there. But maybe we read too much into these things. There's such a thing as staring too long into the face of the Sphinx. But you think about, okay, but you know, it's as if they don't know that they're going to be doing an iPhone, iPod, or iTunes event in the fall. Why do they just simply slip this in there during a very, very high press tech week? Why are they still like not talking about the iPod during any of their keynote announcements? I think it's sort of like the great news. They're still making the hard drive iPod, and now they've dropped the price $50, and you get 256 gigabytes instead of 128 gigabytes. That's nice, but they haven't redesigned it, and they haven't. Well, Kelly's right. It's nice that they finally put a better camera on it. For me, that was the big news of the thing. Yeah. I think that if it maybe they're starting to think about it as a useful thing to have in the price list. If iOS 8 is going to be making this iOS into a much better like fitness and personal lifestyle organized data app sort of system, because maybe they're not going to break people out of the phones that they're being issued to their companies. Maybe they're not going to be able to break out of whatever phones they're locked in a contract with. But if you can give them a $200 device that is the ultimate thing to have in your pocket for the device that you're wearing on your wrist, that might be the thing to keep on the price list.
I know a number of developers who use the iPod Touch as the off-year upgrade. They have their device on contract for 2 years, so they've got this iPhone. So maybe they have a 5, but then last summer, not being eligible to upgrade for another year, they bought an iPod Touch. And then this summer, this year when the eligibility comes up, they'll be able to get the 5S plus 1, whatever that's going to be. And then next summer, they buy just another iPod Touch. And it gives you a way to have the most recent hardware and test against it. And basically, as long as whatever you're doing doesn't require phone calls, you're more or less rock solid as far as having a hardware unit. And it's a handy thing for kids. You can use it around the house and, like offline. You can take it with you and they can play games and it's not going to count against your data cap and things like that. So I think it's still a pretty nifty device. It's sort of, the contract-free iPhone is a really good comparison, but it's got a lot of advantages that, now for regular folks, I don't know, because aside from, let me give one to the kids or let me buy one that I load up with music that lives in the glove compartment of my car. And that's where my music comes from. Some people have that approach as well because maybe they buy a smaller phone. Like I can only get a 16 gig phone, but I can get a 64 gig iPod. And so I can put loads and loads of music on this and then put that in my car or take it with me to work out. And, if it gets wet or if I drop it or something, like I can still get phone calls. And I think that's something else that people probably use it for as well.
I mean,
does anybody think this is a response to like the Nexus 7 tablet and the Kindle Fire 7-inch? These really, really great pocketable tablets that don't require a contract. I mean, Apple doesn't have anything quite like that. Even their iPad minis aren't, they don't have GPS. They don't do, they're not as easy to transport.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I was going to say was that very much with the Mini, there's a lot of stuff in there that you were like, well, this would be really cool if it did this, and actually it doesn't mimic the iPhone in the right kind of way. And if this mimics the iPhone, all bar making calls via a 3G service, then that would be superb. And don't forget as well, I mean, a year and a half ago, we were talking about rumors about there being an iPod Touch with a 3G card slot for data only. But whether that's going to come or not. But I've got to say, my daughter, I've got a little iPod Touch, iPod Shuffle, and she sits with that on car journeys, and it's the black piano one. I haven't even gone and taken and got the exploding battery dealt with, but she loves it. She absolutely adores it.
Oh, who doesn't want an exploding anything when you're a kid?
Yeah, you just want that. You want that will it, won't it kind of drama.
I mean, the obvious thing here to me is the $500 price difference. as a kid, you can have a 64 gig device with your music on and a $20 phone. And you can play all the games, you can play the gaming stuff. So, it's, that's the thing. That's where it's aiming as far as I'm concerned. And, why don't Apple put these in the keynote anymore? Because as Andy said earlier on, Apple like to take you through every little bit of their keynote, everything with a chamfered edge and whatever else. And as they're bringing together the iPhone and probably the iPad events, I'd imagine, there's just not time for an iPod event and no one's really interested in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of comments in the chat room on this one. First one is, why haven't they brought out a 128 gig version? and then I could replace my iPod Classic. Windrider says, well, all of my music collection fits on a 64 gig iPod Touch anyway. Mine does not, unfortunately. Still waiting for the 128 gig version, says Russ. When I was a kid, 64 gig was a supercomputer, said Batwench. No, mate, they hadn't even invented the gigabyte then, mate. So don't lie. Downcast fan, says Kelly. And Windrider says he likes Podcast Lounge on the Nokia, which I use, actually, and it's not bad. It's okay. And apparently there's a fix for the podcast app, which is to switch the device into airplane mode, start up the podcast app, and then turn off the airplane mode. Apparently that works.
The best fix for the podcast app is to delete it off the phone and buy something else.
Yes.
Is to use,
Downcast.
Downcast and Pocket Cast are the two that I know. The people I know use the most commonly. It's usually one or the other.
European, go on.
Well, I was going to say, can I defend the podcast app? Because I actually quite like it. It was rubbish when it first came out, but it's got better and better.
Okay, yes, you can.
And I find myself, imagine us, like 2 years ago, with podcasting and stuff like that, you connect your iPhone to your Mac via iTunes to synchronize it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I don't do that anymore. My iPhone is totally independent of my Mac. It's totally self-reliant. And to download my podcasts or to manage my photos or whatever, my iPhone is totally independent of my Mac. In fact, if anything, it's a pain in the ass to synchronize the two of them. And I think the iTunes podcast app is doing a really good job.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Except I don't use it.
Well, give it a go.
Go on, Andy.
I think it's a case of one of these things. Apple put something out there. Yeah, they are improving it and making it work and fix bug fixes, but there are better third-party solutions.
Okay, and Andy, you were about to defend there.
All I was going to say is that, yeah, it was utter crap when it first came out. I mean, just this sort of, have you ever, like, when you review and, like, you take a look at all kinds of software, you kind of have to have a sense of humility that you know enough about Apple products that say, wow, if this is working this badly, either there's something I don't understand or maybe my phone isn't working properly or there's something wrong, because they would not have made something this bad.
Maybe it's just me.
They actually did, didn't they? I think the problem they created for themselves is that they failed so quickly and so immediately for the first two releases that a lot of people simply said, okay, I've totally forgotten that there's a podcast app that's available for this phone. And so you download a great app like Downcast or Pocket Cast, and then you just never go looking back to see what Apple's done to catch up.
Would you agree? I mean, with me that it is pretty good now. It's okay. It does the job, you know.
It's much better. I mean, my first fatal disconnect was the fact that for the first couple of versions, it wouldn't let me do like point and shoot sort of. I want to assemble this stuff. I'm going to be driving for an hour. Here are 11 podcasts that have been received in the last 48 hours. I want to listen to this one first, then that one, then this one. And would say, we have, of course you want to listen to them in absolute chronological order. You're welcome. We've solved the problem of you having to reorganize your podcast list automatically because we've done it for you automatically. So it's still better. But the thing is, I think that once someone is really happy with a product that they're using, it's not good enough to be better. You have to point at something that they're either they don't like and they're the thing they're happy with right now, or convince them that you're going to be happier with this other thing, because people don't have a responsibility to keep downloading the latest version of whatever a competitor is doing and test it against what they're using right now. If they're happy with what they're using, they're going to keep on using it.
I tweeted this week. So I do a podcast and...
no, you don't.
Occasionally do.
You have been known to.
You've been known to. That's a better answer.
Okay. But it's still quite popular, even though they don't come out very regular. But the point being that there has been a sort of a paradigm shift away from individual apps like that sort of pull all the podcasts together. So we're talking about the Apple podcast app. I listen to a great podcast called Mysterious Universe, and they've got a great app. And apparently, to be down with the kids now, you've got to have your own app that works really well. And that's how people now are consuming podcast content.
So like a station-based app?
Yeah, I think so. It's like you emotionally commit to the app. It's a way of emotionally committing to the podcast or whatever media stream it is. So you put that particular application on your phone, and as I say, you're emotionally committed to it, and you keep sort of checking back, and it's almost pulling away from the old school. I mean, so we've gone through the three stages. We've gone through the iTunes syncing with your phone. We've gone through the podcast app that sort of pulls everything together, or whatever particular aggregator you want to use. And now we're at the stage that each podcast or whatever media stream it is has its own app, and we're probably leaving behind these sort of apps or methods of listening to your media onto these sort of what's the word I'm looking for?
I have no idea. There you go. If you're a developer and you'd like to write us a BTN application so that you can get all of our podcasts via audio and video down, thank you very much. We'd love to have it. Stick it in the app, in the iTunes store, and give yourself 69p. First person does it gets it promoted on the podcast, and you make all the money from it. There you go. EU are looking into the Beats purchased by Apple.
I noticed your headphones, Ewan.
Anti-competitionism-ish type stuff going on. I looked at this story and I thought, well, Apple don't make any headphones, so there's a competition issue. But this is the music story, radio-y type thing going on here, isn't it? That's the cautionary tale. But I still don't see that there's any real conflict with this.
Are they flagging it as some sort of suspicious activity, like, you know, on my credit card? Or is it just after a certain amount of money, everything at least gets the once over?
Yeah, that's a good point. In Miami, 3.2 billion is not really something that you'd hide behind the sofa or down the cushions, is it?
Yeah, but it's peanuts these days for businesses.
You hide it in an offshore company for tax reasons.
Oh, is that what you do, Andy? That pays for your stuffed squirrels.
They want that $28 that I made selling cans I put on the street. They're going to have to come looking for it.
Good on you, Kramer. It says the story listed by Reuters, Antitrust Commission expects to make a decision on the purchase by July 30th. EU regulators can approve the deal unconditionally or demand concessions, but this has also not been ratified by the US yet anyway. So they've still got to examine the deal, whether they're saying that there's any concerns on competition.
But the only way that this could be a concern to competition, I mean, there, you cannot tell me that Beats are the only headphone manufacturer, and by doing this, Apple are removing people's headphone choice. I think this is the case as a deal above a certain size. I think it's because Apple have what's seen as a huge market share in the music industry with iTunes, but even that's not really a monopoly anymore. No. That it's being, yeah, I think this is a formality of paperwork, and I really can't see this. This is a non-story, I think, really.
Okay, I'll move on then, Scotty.
Yeah, sorry to screw your show up, but yeah, just move on.
I totally agree.
Scotty the editor.
Move on, man.
Never mind. This is the story of the week for me. 12-inch MacBook Air to begin production in third quarter 2014. DigiTimes is reporting that
just
Apple's...
Just wake me up when you're done with this, okay?
Oh, come on. You've got to say... that my proudest possession of all the collection of Macs that I got, all my little museum, my proudest possession is my 12-inch MacBook PowerBook. Okay, stuff off. My 12-inch PowerBook. Rick McCorriston gave me. I've got to get Rick McCorriston in because he gave me free of charge, and also Mustang Mac because he gave me the power supply for it. Now you can talk, Kelly. My prized possession. So the idea of a 12, I know it's not even going to be close to being a square screen like that one was, but it doesn't matter. It's just 12 inches is a magic number.
I love the 12-inch PowerBook. I think it is a beautiful machine. I thought it then. I think it now. I still have a soft spot in my heart for the 12-inch PowerBook G4. That being said, I am over the rumors about, particularly from DigiTimes, about every permutation of every computer now. They make a 21.5-inch iMac, so there's going to be a 22. I don't care. It's out, until they've done something revolutionary with the innards, then I don't care. So that's the only reason I'm over it. It doesn't have anything to do with some sort of irrational hatred of the MacBook Air or some irrational hatred of a 12-inch dimension on a screen. Neither of those is my concern. But is the 11-inch going to go away for the 12? Because then you'd have the 11-inch Air, the 12-inch Air, and the 13-inch Air. That seems weird. So are they all going to become the 12-inch? What?
Now, the reason I think the only reason this story will be interesting and true is because the 12-inch will become the only Air, because the and for Air for some other reason than smallness, because I think the whole, you know, the 13, 15 are both going to become like the Air, but still be MacBook Pros. So the Air will just be a 12-inch model, and then you'll be able to get 13 and 15-inch MacBook Pros, which will be the same form factor as the current Air.
But, I mean, there's an interesting point, because I see a distinct designation. I don't see a distance between the 13-inch Air and the 13-inch MacBook, but the 11 is a different computing experience, and I wouldn't buy a 13-inch Air, but I love my... I mean, my 11-inch Air has nearly replaced my iPad, effectively, because it's so...
The 11-inch Air is my main machine, and I'm a developer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love the 11-inch, and I think it's that it's the, it, you know, it's not 16:9, I know, but that 16:9-esque... landscape mode is something that I really value, especially when watching TV shows and movies on the train down to London. So I would be disappointed if the 12-inch came and it was less 11-inch like.
Let's not forget that the other role of the airline is to have an affordable MacBook. I mean, $899 is still not in the ballpark of what you can get for a comparably powered Windows 7 or Windows 8 laptop, but at least it's another $100 less. It's $100 more affordable. So if Apple decided to say, we're going to sweep away the airline, we're going to replace with one 12-inch model that costs now $1,100, $1,200, and we're going to boost up the MacBook Pros so that they're now $1,300, $1,400, $1,500, that would be a bad move. I mean, I agree with Kelly. First, Digitimes is sometimes they're on the ball, but they really don't have a great track record, and it's a sort of product that I just don't understand the need for. And it's the sort of product where I can't really decide whether it's a good rumor or not, and I'm just willing to wait to see if it actually happens.
It's only interesting to me if we spin out the speculation like we were doing about how the MacBook Air is going to become one model. That's going to be the 12-inch machine. And then you're going to have a 13 and a 15 over here. That to me would be sort of interesting. Like the other rumor this week about Apple developing HomeKit hardware.
Mm.
What, you know, because when you spin that speculation out, well, doesn't Apple already have a small little device that you plug into your Wi-Fi network that you can operate with your phone? Let's think just for a moment. Is that a thing that Apple already has?
But that's only a hobby, apparently.
You lost me.
Is it a thing that is totally overdue for an upgrade, for some sort of serious revision? Is it a thing that would be a piece of cake to turn into the brain of some of the HomeKit stuff? Because I think the answer to all those things is yes. And I think if they're doing any sort of hardware development, the rumors are all stating that it's beyond the exploratory phase. Like there are people actually working on some sort of project. And if that's the case, then making the Apple TV the brain of the HomeKit situation to me is really, really, really appealing. It's an inexpensive device. Lots of people already have one and have a pretty good idea how it works and what it does for them. And it's not going to be a hard sell to get people to buy another so that they can do all this extra stuff in their house. Like, I will buy one immediately if it turns into a thing where I can turn off all the lights using Siri instead of having to have three baling wire and bubble gum rigged together if this, then that channels just to make sure that all the lights turn off when I go to bed. If I can just tell Siri to do it and I know it's handled, that's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Go on,
the other really great thing about Apple TV is that you think about it as a low power device that's always on and always on the network. So if it's so given the new power of iOS to work so closely with macOS, if you start to think of the Apple TV that way and you give it the responsibility of intercepting every request from every device that you're using, no matter where you are in the world, and being able to say, okay, he wants to connect to the iMac or the Mac Mini. He's in Barcelona right now, and the office is in New York, whatever. The Apple TV can be the one that says, okay, it's going to be my responsibility to send the right signal to wake up the iMac and make sure that it's ready to receive that connection, as opposed to we're going to have to make sure the iMac stays in some sort of state of readiness that has to still operate at a high level of consciousness. The most exciting thing about the Apple TV right now is that it is so hopelessly out of date right now. I wound up doing like a side-by-side comparison between the Apple TV and the Fire TV and the Roku 3, and man alive, I mean, they're all three of these things are plugged into ports on my TV, and I never use the Apple TV at all because it's slow, the interface is terrible, the range of content is nowhere near what I can get on the other devices. And
that's funny.
When I tried to use the Apple TV again after like a month long layoff, I saw something I had not seen in a month of using the Roku and the Fire TV, and that is a spinning beach ball or a spinning progress bar.
Wow.
Like, yeah. Authenticating, buffering. Like, oh man, this is not.
Wow.
Yeah. You know that Apple has absolutely no hesitancy to kill something that it has no interest in anymore. And oftentimes they will keep something along because they have big plans for it, but not right now. They've got that scheduled for 2014, 2015. And the fact that they've got a device that costs not one penny less than these other competing products, but is so much worse than all these competing products. Oddly enough, with Apple, makes me think, oh boy, they've got big plans for it.
And we did hear from Tim, you know, I don't remember if it was in an earnings call or what, but he said, we can't call it a hobby anymore. It made $1 billion last year. And so that's like one thing that makes me really happy. I'm fascinated by your TV experience, Andy, because at my house, we picked up a Roku 3 and plugged it in and got it all set up and did all of the rejiggering and everything and got it all like ready to go. It was like, okay, let's do some stuff. And after a couple of evenings of having it, Mr. Kelly's review of the Roku was, we should have just got another Apple TV.
Really?
So, yeah. And so he's ready for one. And then I don't know what we'd do with the one downstairs that we have now, but like I've got planned, like as soon as this is a thing that comes out, and like we've been fighting with the home automation setup in our house already with the brain that we have and getting things set up and getting things configured properly. And so he told me before WWDC, when there were rumors about Apple doing home automation, he said, whatever Apple announces tomorrow, we're buying one.
I think the thing though is, tell me if I'm on the wrong track here, Andy, in what you're saying, but the problem with Apple TV is not what it provides. It's the way in which it provides it. And if you were trapped in an elevator for 2 hours with Tim Cook, the thing that you would say to him is, front row? Really? You know, because that's it. Once you get past that first screen, you're into front row, and front row has been the most reviled and pointless and kludgy and useless and no wraparound menus kind of interface that you've ever seen in your life. It's a piece of shit, and it's always been a piece of shit. It's never worked properly, Tim. For Christ's sake, man. I love Apple TV, but front row, come on!
At best, it was novel when it was initially Tim Cook, released.
The first thing I would ask him is, what time is it? To try to trick him into showing me his watch.
Okay. See, that's the thing. That's why you're a journalist and I'm an idiot. I just bitch and complain.
My difficulty with Apple TV, I respect the differing opinions. For me, it was no contest between the Apple TV and the other things that I had. Mostly because with Roku, you know, I can get the Plex app on it. I can get the Slingbox app on it. It's so much easier to navigate. It's so much faster. And believe it or not, part of it is just the remote, where it's not this aluminum stick of gum that is always getting lost. I mean, I complained about this once, and I got photos from multiple people saying, "Well, here's what I do," and they showed me an Apple TV remote that is actually just like duct taped to the bottom of their cable TV remote. Because they said that's the only way that I can not lose this thing.
I've seen Velcro.
I mean, it's great. It's great if you are invested in Apple products throughout your entire house. And it's going to become even more of an advantage with iOS 8. For now, it really reads to me as just another one of several different boxes that will stream Netflix and all these other services to your TV, but doesn't do it quite as well as Roku does.
I own seven of those. because they keep losing the sodding things, and then I find them in the sofa. I'm going to do the Velcro thing because I've got some double sided Velcro with sticky on the back, so that I can put it on. Mm-hmm. I can fix batteries on the underside of my quadcopters. That is going on the back of my Apple TV the second I finish this podcast. The Bash is coming up. Yes, it's the 11th and 12th of July. There are 10 curry tickets left. If you would like to come to the curry, you need to buy your curry ticket. Greeny, do you mind going on mute, old boy?
What, me?
Yeah, because I'm talking. Marwood's in the background bashing the crap out of something.
That's not me.
Is it not you?
No.
Well, the others are all stood still, unless their video's frozen. Anyway, the Bash, the curry tickets, there's 10 curry tickets left if you want to come. It's £10 deposit. You get the £10 back on the night so you can pay your bill. Don't worry about it. We've got a fantastic night planned. There is the place is going to be open from 6 o'clock for us. We've got the events room at the back. Beer and ciders and wines and all that kind of stuff will be available. And there'll be a load of starters out in Tyrene, so you can sit and have a nibble and a munch before we sit down to a main event a bit later on. But there's a little garden out the back. It's not huge, but it's good enough. We can all sit out there and we can have a good time and chit-chat and start drinking. So that's from 6 p.m. on the 11th of July. As I say, there's only 10 tickets left, so get buying if you can. And the Bash, £25 gets you in. It gets you all the food, all the wine, all the beer, all the fun you could possibly want. We've got a caterer in. I need to know numbers, so if you could buy this week, that'd be really cool. But there'll be tickets left over. If you can't, don't worry. Come along, have a good time. I'm going to have some quadcopters down there for a laugh with some cameras on them, and we'll have a bit of fun with those. And there's going to be loads of fun and games. Aaron Claydon's bringing up all the space uppers from last year, so Don McAllister can twist his knee again. And we will be having some fun. There'll be sack races, and there'll be the World Card Cutting Championships yet again. Scarlet Neighbour will be defending her title. If you're under 16, it's free of charge. If you're over 16, it's £25. We're still hoping to get a sponsor. We're still talking to them. They're saying they definitely will, but we've not got anything through from them yet. But if they do, you'll get a fiver back off that. It'll go back to last year's price at £20. And we've got some prizes and stuff like that for everyone. So Bash, get your tickets. British Tech Network/Bash tickets if you want to get in. The other one that we've got, of course, is the Network Union. They're superb. So if you work with IT in a large company, they can help you with BT, MPLS, WAN, SIP, and any Ethernet connectivity that you've got. Now, if you're a new BT subscriber, you can subscribe through the Network Union, or if you're existing BT user, you can still link to the BT to the Network Union, and your relationship with BT will stay the same. It all exists the same. There's no changes, there's no contract changes. You're still paying BT direct. What you've got is the Network Union is an extra layer of support in between. So if you're a large firm with a huge WAN or anything, then you can check them out. Or if you're a small business, as long as you've got business broadband BT, then they can help you and they'll help tweak your system and make sure everything works and you get the best possible deal that you can. Now then, normally at this point, all the US listeners switch off. Don't. Because Network Union are agents for Masergy. I don't know how you pronounce that. They're HQ'd in Dallas. They've got a fantastic global MPLS WAN network. And anyone out there who's in the US who's an IT manager, get in touch with the Network Union and they can help you, even though you're right the way out there. No worries at all. So go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors and click on the Network Union link. If you give them your email address, they just use it to contact you and see if they can help you. And if they can't, they get rid of the address and they also don't badger you and they don't sell it to anyone else, which I think is rather novel. Well done. Robert's a lovely, lovely guy. So if you do have any ability to give him some business, please do, because he supported us desperately. He's been absolutely brilliant. We've got all of the lines for the shows are coming in through the Network Union. And also he sponsors the Patreon giveaway each month. He chucks £50 into Patreon just to sponsor the giveaway. So please support him if you can, because we'd be lost without people like him. And also we'd be lost without people like UK too. They give us all the bandwidth. We've got unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage space. Every show we've ever published is on our servers, and they pick up the tab, and they have done since 2008. They're a really wonderful, wonderful bunch. Please, if you can, give them support. Anything you want to buy, go and check them out for the net. Massive discounts as well. 20% off your domains, which is huge if you're buying some of the new .London domains and those kind of things. So check them out. They're uk2.net, but please go through britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors again, and you'll get the best deal possible. And we'll get the kudos for having sent you. And they're doing yours as well. You can do sign into your account through there and we get the kudos. So it all works. Right. Have we got any cool things? Scotty, you're top left, which means you will start us off.
But do I mute my mic before I start speaking?
Good man.
Okay. I'm going to go for a bit of software called Solver. S-O-U-L-V-E-R.
Right.
It's quite hard to explain, but it's like they explain themselves as imagine you've got something you need to work out, so throw some numbers in. It's too complex for your calculator, but really, who wants to fire up a spreadsheet to do this? So it's a way of just typing in a bunch of calculations, keeping the results, using those results in the next calculation and stuff. And it's really hard to explain, but once you've got it there and it sits open on my Mac all the time, it's just a really, really useful tool. It's about $12 in the Mac App Store. There's a little video on the website. It's from Aquila, Aquila.com, and it's called Solver, and it's one of those useful little tools that just once you've got, you will never want to lose again.
Excellent, mate. So just say again, I've been trying to find it on the net here, and I can't find it, but you say it's in the Mac App Store.
Yeah, it's Aquila, AquilaA.com. It's called Solver with a U, so that will put some of our American listeners.
S-O-U-L-V-E-R.
And it's a great little tool that quite hard to explain, but once you start using it, it's just always in use.
Excellent, mate. Good pick. Thank you very much. Mr. Natko, what do you have for us?
Well, we've been talking about MacBook Airs, and now that Apple's decided that everything with a spinning hard drive is crap, you're looking for a way to add more storage to a MacBook Air or even a MacBook Pro these days. And so I've been buying these little cool, like tiny, tiny little flash drives. This is the Cruiser Fit by SanDisk, and it's 64 gigabytes of storage on this thing that is so tiny you can actually keep it like plugged into a USB port all the time and just keep adding and just get 64 gigs of free additional storage and just treat it like it's just it's part of the system. There are a bunch of companies that are making devices like this. Oh, and by the way, let me unplug it. This is really all it is. So you can get an idea of exactly how tiny,
wow,
you know, the actual external part is. It really is just nothing but a USB connector with like a memory chip built into it. And it also comes with this, amusingly enough, this little cover. So you can actually pretend that this is like a pocket flash drive that is not going to get lost in your pants or be left in a bus station. Really, if this thing were not plugged into my drive at my USB port at all times, this would get lost in about 10 seconds.
It doesn't stick out too much, which is cool.
Making these, there are like three or four companies that are making these tiny, tiny, tiny drives that are designed for Ultrabooks and MacBook Airs. The only disadvantage of the, I like the SanDisk because it's cheap, it's available, and it works fine. If you are willing to hunt around a little bit more, you can find ones that work on USB 3 instead of USB 2, so you'll get much, much faster data transfer speeds. You're also starting to find some that have like those. Instead of maxing out at 64, now they're maxing out at 128. I'm happy with the one I got right now. But until Apple finally gets hit on the head by a coconut, undergoes a complete personality change, and starts designing computers that can be upgraded later on, it's probably the best solution we're going to get for storage.
Yeah, very good. I like that. And it doesn't seem to stick out too far as well, which is nice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've got I had to take this out of I'm using my MacBook Pro, my SSD MacBook Pro to give me. It's plugged into the screen behind me, so I can't show you how well that works. But yeah, I mean, as you can see, it sticks out a little bit, but not so much that you can't still slip this into your notebook into a case. It's not so much that you'd be worried that's going to start damaging the port by having wear and tear in it. And I mean, there are plenty of flash drives that are conventional that have like 128 gigs, 256 gigs of storage, but it's such a pain in the butt to have to, you know, eject the drive every time you shut down and pull it out so that you don't break anything when you put your computer away. Because you don't want to throw. To me, the one advantage of SSD is the ability when I'm done at the coffee shop to simply close the lid of my computer, toss it in my bag, and walk away without having to shut anything down, without having to wait for any blinking light to tell me that the heads are parked or anything like that. So, great solution.
I managed to snap off an SD card in the MacBook Air in the MacBook Pro, and I got that out with a cake slice and a kebab skewer.
Yeah, I mean, there are also a couple of different companies that are making one-off design, like tiny, like they actually like snap an SD card in half in a way, so that you can actually put this into the SD card and keep it there, and it'll sit flush. And you do need a special tool to get it out. But it's like, I use my SD card slot all the time. I don't want to tie it up all the time.
So. It comes free with a cake slice and a kebab skewer.
Yeah. Isn't that just sort of standard a toolkit for everybody in Birmingham?
Yeah, pretty much. So you go down Broad Street on a Saturday night, that's what everyone's carrying down their trousers.
Yeah, didn't know there were so many MacBook aficionados out there in Birmingham.
That's exactly it, mate. No question. Wait till there's IT conferences here, then you can come in and you can find out what Birmingham's really like. Which there's never going to be IT in Birmingham, Jesus.
I ran an IT conference in Birmingham.
Do you see if you can?
No,
get...
I did. I haven't.
Did.
For a couple
see
of
that's
years,
the point. That's the point.
I used to run some NS conference minis in the old custard factory.
Well, there's so many Luddites in Birmingham, mate. That's why it closed down. It was just too dangerous, clearly. Verso, what have you got for us, Mrs.?
I have an analog pick this week. This is something I have and love that I backed on Kickstarter 100 years ago. They have their storefront open now, and it's called Nock, N-O-C-K. And their site is nocko.com, not co. And they make cases, I guess, for pouches for your pens and your Moleskine notebook. And if you're a hipster PDA person, you can get one that has a nice spot for a pen and a stack of index cards.
What's a PDA?
Personal Digital Assistant.
Oh.
But the hipster PDA is a stack of index cards, usually with a binder clip on them, and you just keep them in your pocket. So if you're a person who has pens and notebooks, you want to make sure you keep everything in the same place. This is an awesome way to do it. I can reach mine. Yeah. So here's mine. And this is the one I got on Kickstarter. So it's orange inside and out. And I've got pens in the one side and my notebook in the other, my Star Wars notebook. And it's a really nice way to be able to take this and I can toss it in my bag. Sometimes I swap out one of the pens for a Sharpie. You know, that way I'm just like prepped wherever I am.
For
that
autograph
way, like,
signing.
If the Wi-Fi sucks, I can still write. And I dig it. And their stuff is reasonably priced. It's super well built. I have beat the snot out of this and you would never know it just to look at it. It's beautiful, and they're just people who are really into what they're doing, and I think it's awesome. So there you go.
Yeah, I've gone to the website, nockco.com, and there's some cool colors here. They look like it's kind of Dacron-y type material.
Yeah, it's mostly, what is it? What am I thinking of? Nylon, Cordura nylon.
Okay, all right. Cool.
So they're super durable. I've taken mine everywhere. I throw it in the bottom of my bag, in the bottom of my backpack. That's always where it ends up. And it's taken a beating, and mine still looks great. I'm actually considering getting something else from them now. But I saw it on Kickstarter like a year and a half ago and really dug it. So cool. I'm glad to see that part of my Kickstarting helped them build their storefront. So yeah.
Excellent. Greeny, what do you have for us, sir?
Wiccan Wheel of the Year.
Go on, what? that needs an explanation.
Well, it is pretty much what it says. I don't know where you... It's obviously a very personal question for everybody, where you stand on religion and stuff like that. And when I was young, I always believed I was a Buddhist, and I suppose I've still got that in me. But as I sort of got older, the Wiccan side of things is, well, it's got its attractions, you know, living by the seasons and the and nature and stuff like that, rather than, I'm not going to say made up religion, but, you know, some of the other religions that are slightly questionable. So Wiccan, that was bad, wasn't it? Shouldn't say that. I'll go and get death threats now.
Other made up religions. Thank you, Will. I'll be sure to forward on those complaints to you.
But when you say other made-up religion, that's saying, you know, other made-up religions as well as my made-up one. It's just adding on to it.
Well, I don't know. I tried to make my own religion a few years ago. Remember, Ewan?
Yes, you did. The Edam Project.
Yeah, the Elan project. Yes, but that didn't work out. Anyway, Wicked Wheel of the year. So, for Wiccans, the year begins on the 31st of October, Halloween. And then we go round, so it works in a slightly different way. And what this does is, shall I show you the screen?
Yes, go on.
Probably the best way of doing it. Can you see that?
Okay.
So it's a little arrow that moves round, like, almost like a clock that goes through the year. And it shows you sort of where we're at. So we've just gone through midsummer, haven't we? And we're coming towards the Greater Sabbat, which is the start of autumn and the time of the first harvest, a holiday for fruition and a time to prepare for the coming of winter. Isn't that amazing? Like, it seems spring only just sort of began 2 days ago. But so here we are. We're sort of midsummer now, and autumn is coming up upon us. And what I really like about it is when it comes to the spring, they always knock spring forwards a little bit. So, yeah, okay, here we go. Imbolc, which is the greatest Sabbat. I don't know what Sabbat is. And the beginning of spring, which is the first.
Well, it's your religion.
So it's like a really fills me with hope. And I think, oh, fantastic. Spring's here. It's 1st of February. It's pissing it down outside, but it's okay because my Wiccan wheel of the tells me that spring is here. So there you go. That's my one.
So, well, how do the seven naked lesbians you were talking about last time fit in with your religion?
I don't know. I in some ways, I suppose why I want to sort of. Wouldn't it be lovely? All naked lesbians dancing around
No, look, Greeny, we've got a serious journalist here. Do not do that. Do not start on this stuff. I got letters of complaint about that.
Did you? I'm sorry. I was only asking him a video. I withdraw the statement.
You're the only person I get complaints about, Greeny. That's not true. I get complaints about Kelly as well, but it's you.
Oh, that's okay. Nice.
I've never had a complaint about Mr. Anatko. I've never had a complaint about Scotty. See? Never had a complaint about me. I don't get complaints about me. They just call me names.
I get complaints about you.
Yes, okay. Now, the more observant of you will have noticed that I appear to be wearing some headphones, which I don't normally do because I normally got in-ear stuff because I don't like tech on show. I like me mics hidden and all that kind of stuff. But I got these this week because I went away and I thought, right, I'm not taking the lappy with me. I'm just going to take my iPad because I was working night, so I just watched a couple of movies in the hotel room and that'll be that. Like an idiot, forgot my earphones. So I went out to dinner. And as I was walking to dinner, I walked past a shop that sold Libaro, the telecoms people. And the guy in there was selling headphones. And I looked at him because I did a double take because they're kind of like Beat-esque. But the reason I picked these is because, the time with Apple is the Beatsy type thing. These things are called Solid Bass. And you buy them, they come in a nice little box. And they've got a nice little bag and that kind of stuff. And they're really, really well-made set of headphones. They feel really, really good. And as you can see, I bought more than one pair. But they're fantastic. The quality of the sound on them is unbelievable. They're one of the best-sounding headphones I've ever used in my entire life, I can honestly say. A little bit bassy, maybe, but for the purist. But they're absolutely excellent. They look like Beats. They're meant to be a kind of Beatsy-type copy. They don't say Beats on them. They say Solid Bass on them. But they are £10. And all I can say is, if you're making headphones and selling them at $300 plus, then you really are a con artist, because these earphones sound fantastic and they were £10 retail. So there you go. Solid Bass. If you see those online or if you see them at a Libaro shop or something like that, go and buy them because they're absolutely bloody brilliant. Beats, you're a bunch of thieving bastards. No, I think I've always thought that, and I've got to say, all the other headphone manufacturers who were looking at Beats going, oh, let's release a premium line and kill everybody with their money, you're all a bunch of thieving bastards as well.
Well, they say, isn't there, there's a certain point that you get. So if you're marketing stuff, you do the cheap stuff, you do the middle stuff, and you have to, as a not a retailer but a manufacturer, release something that's super silly price, so idiots will buy it, and there's no real difference to the two. That's a well-known sort of marketing policy, and maybe you're right. I don't know, but for £10, I mean, I'm on my own when I've bought like Apple style headphones for like £2 at the gadget show or something like that, and they only last about 2 weeks.
No, I mean, I've had these for a total of 6 days now. Well, no, I haven't even already had them for 4 days. But they're great. They work, and they've got a microphone built into the thing as well, so you can use it with your iPhone. We'll see. I mean, next week, if they're broken, I'll be saying they're crap on the show. Don't worry. For talking of quality, for those of you who are aficionados and know a quality when you see it, then you can always support this podcast at patreon.com/British Tech Network. We're taking Patreon donations. If you'd like to give us some, then that's fantastic. Whether it's $1 or whether it's $85, which is what the network union give us, it's entirely up to you. But just a little token of your appreciation for listening to the show would be very well received. Thank you very much. And it's gone back into paying for better lighting, better quality service to you guys. It's paid for live stream, which is at the moment struggling for its quality. I have to say, we've got a bit of severe discussions going on with them. But it's paid for the lighting in the studio. It's paid for all the changes, like the green screen and that kind of stuff. So thank you very much. And the Northern Studio will be starting, thanks to your Patreon donations, next month, or month after next, August the 1st. And the Pocket Show and Gamer Show will be video as well as. So it's we're adding to the service. Thank you very much for everyone who's done it. And don't forget, we've got a giveaway, it's a free prize draw to all of the people that donate in the Patreon draw, in the Patreon subscriptions. And this month we're giving away an Apple TV, and we should be giving away some Slate Goes, but I've got to talk to Skelter. They're going to give them us, but whether they get here in time for this month or whether it's going to be next month is a question. So, but there's definitely an Apple TV being given away this month. Thank you very much. Oh, where can we get a hold of you, Scotty? Unmute still, dude.
Anyone would think I didn't do this podcasting stuff, so you better find me at my podcasting site, which is iDeveloper.co.
That's it, mate. In the chat room, Mark Shepherd says, what's the font on the Patreon giveaway? It's Frank, F-R-A-N-K. It's from 1,000 Free Fronts. Mr. Anatko, where are you, sir?
Check out my blog at anatko.com. If you can't spell my last name, try C-W-O-B.com for the celestial waste of bandwidth. Or you can go to Chicago Sun-Times site at suntimes.com.
Good man. Thank you very much for coming along, because I know you had a bit of a long working night and evening and day, and so I do appreciate you being here. Thank you, pal.
It makes me feel like I'm a hard worker to not blow this off.
Good man. Thank you. And Kelly, where are you, Mrs.?
You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso. You can also find me occasionally on the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast and writing the occasional news piece there, as well as hosting the Tuwa Talk cast on Sunday nights.
Apparently, my headphones are on Amazon for $12.99, so I got a really good deal.
Hey,
is the Prime on them as well? No. And Greeny, where are you, sir?
BritishMac.com. Also on Twitter, which is BritishMac.
Publishing a podcast soon?
Yes, this every week. Yes, it's coming. I really do my best.
I know you do, mate. You're a busy guy. Starting a new job.
Okay, it is coming. But I spend a long time trying to do this. So I craft it. It's like a piece of art for me. A podcast is like a piece of art, and I spend a long time putting all the pieces
Mate,
together.
A podcast for you is like a rare piece of art.
Well, that's nice. Even more valuable.
I couldn't agree more, mate. Thank you. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next Friday at normal time, 3 o'clock, for the Mac Show. Join us if you can. Thanks very much for listening.